Roundabout with Tony Barnfield on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Justin, you usually pick quite an impressive range, and to me it seems that there are well-known names and there are some almost eccentric items.
Yes, I mean, really what I'm trying to do is to show that classical music is far more than most people think it is. We have this useless word, classical, which covers about 900 years of music, and my job is to show people that there's a huge amount of variety within that. So some of it's mainstream and some of it's more experimental or eclectic.
And you bring people from all over the place, and unlike many creating an event like this, you're not scared of, inverted commas, modern music, of people like Messiaen and Philip Glass, for instance.
That's right. When you talk to people about the music they like, there's always this assumption that people like safe music. And actually, a lot of people don't know where music's from or when it was written. They just go by the, as I put it, the noise it makes. And I think that should give me, and I get confidence from that and those conversations, in thinking that I can actually try a few different things. And the festival is not meant for just one person or one type of person. It's meant for a whole range of people who might have very different tastes. So, yes, I like to include... So this year we've got Messiaen, Vin Regard. It's actually a cult piece. I mean, it's a couple of hours long, and some moments are quite jazzy, and other bits are unbelievably beautiful, really calm. It's almost as if time stands still. You come out of a performance of that feeling like someone different. You know, it's a kind of life-changing experience, and you don't often get to hear it. So that's another thing that the festival can do, is to bring things to people that they might not have the opportunity to hear.
And the Messiaen is Vin Regard sur l'enfant Jésus.
That's right.
Forgive my pronunciation.
No, well, I'm glad you tried, not me. But so that's essentially 20 reflections on the Jesus child. But as I've said before, you know, you don't have to be religious. I mean, religion was, and his Catholicism was very important to Messiaen, and it inspired a lot of his music. But I think to enjoy his music, you don't have to have necessarily that faith. Some people do, some don't. For me, it's a bit like Bach, the music of Bach. You don't have to be religious to appreciate or enjoy his music, because there's such a strength and a sort of universal power to it that it can appeal, it can touch all hearts, whether they're sacred or secular.
And of course it's Stephen Osborne playing that, who is quite well known.
He's very well known, and this is one of his, well, it's probably not the right word, but one of his party pieces. He's made his reputation really on this piece, because it is extremely difficult, and he brings it alive.
And do you always go and see these people before you book them?
Usually yes, or I will have heard them at some point. It's very rare for me to book an artist I've never seen. But sometimes I'll have heard them doing something else or something similar, and you might have a conversation with them and say, look, I'm really interested in doing this or that piece. Because you develop a sense or an understanding of what artists are good at. And so from that kind of knowledge, you can then allow yourself, as it were, to put in pieces, other pieces, that you might not have heard them play, but you know will be suitable and will be good for them.
Because you're not sort of on the touring circuit of classical performers like many concert halls are. You're not tied into anything totally independent.
That's right.
Must be quite a challenge.
It is. And the thing is, because I'm looking for very high-level artists, particularly those artists that come from abroad, they are going to travel to the major centres, you know, the sort of, I don't know, London, Paris, Berlin, New York and so on. And although Cambridge is very close to London, people in that position, it may as well be, I don't know, somewhere much further away. And there are plenty of artists that only perform in London and perhaps Dublin and nowhere else. You know, some artists I've tried to get that will not come to Cambridge. So a certain amount of my time is spent talking to artists, talking to agents particularly, to say, look, Cambridge is a special place. You'll heard of it. You know, it has a great history, but there's more to it than just the history. There's the living life today and the great music and culture of the city that's going on now.
And of course, the places as well are unique, aren't they?
That's right. And that's one of the things I talk to people about, is the places you're going to hear the music are very different to anywhere else you go and hear music. There are so many wonderful buildings, and some of them are ancient and some of them are modern. And I think it's important to embrace both sides of that.
Is it easy to get all those combinations of venues and artists just right?
I don't know if it's easy, but I give a lot of thought to it, certainly, because I think what people are buying, when people go out, you can listen to so much music, you know, through streaming and so on, online and so on. When people go out, you've got to offer something extra, something special. And what I'm trying to do is to create an experience. So the atmosphere has to be right, the feel of the room has to be right, the scale, the number of seats, the number of people, the layout, whether you're serving drinks, you know, because we have some concerts, we have rush hours that are at 6 o'clock, much more informal. The artists introduce all the pieces and you get a drink as part of your ticket. We have another concert with Natalie Klein, a recital, a wonderful cellist. And with hers, there's no interval in the concert. I mean, what do you do in the interval? And so you just have an hour and a quarter's music, and then afterwards everyone has a drink, and Natalie will come and join us, and the pianist Cedric Pescia will come and join us so that they can just chat and ask questions and find out more about the artists. And that's what you're trying to do. Everything's trying to just get that something special, and it's a whole combination of things, whether it's the place or the way you present it.
And I mentioned Philip Glass as one of these other new music composers. He's the sort of composer I always feel is better seen rather than heard on the radio or on a disc.
I like it particularly live, and you may remember that we got Philip Glass to the festival in 2014 with his Philip Glass Ensemble, and I mean, it was a sellout, it was a hugely popular event, and his music is very popular, and is somehow very accessible, and it comes out of this sort of world that's sort of a bit classical and a bit, I don't know if pop's the right word, but it's amplified, it's sort of slight, has an electronic sounds as well, and that has a very broad appeal. And what we've got this year is in Amy Dixon's concert. She's a saxophonist, an Australian, living in London at the moment. And she found a piece by Philip Glass, which was the violin sonata. Now, anyone who knows the music of Philip Glass knows that he often finds an idea and then it gets repeated and it becomes hypnotic. Now, when you're playing a violin, you can keep bowing. You know, you can keep sort of drawing the bow across the strings for almost as long as your arm can stand it. But when she created a version for saxophone, she has to blow, she has to play all those notes using breath. Mm. And so what she's developed, and this is one of the things that often are features in different parts of the festival, is what I call the high wire acts. You know, the moments where you can't quite believe they can do that. Even though you've never tried to do it yourself, you know how hard it must be. Well, what Amy does, and a lot of wind players, you know, whether you play a clarinet or whatever, would know, is about circular breathing. And circular breathing is the ability to breathe in through your nose while you're playing out of your mouth. And essentially, you're holding the breath in your cheeks and then using your cheeks to cause the pressure through the instrument, the air through the instrument, which means that she then can play these impossibly long phrases. And so with the Philip Glass, you get this amazing, seamless music that goes, you know, that's beautifully hypnotic. But at the same time, you know that for Amy to do that is amazing. And you have to witness that. Hearing that on a recording, well, you get no sense of that. Whereas seeing it live, that's really special.
That technique sounds as if it would be rather helpful if one was reading the shipping forecast.
That's right. That's
a rather right. long performance. And yet, but it's not only that. We'll hear a little extract from it in a moment, but she's also performing some perhaps better-known works as well.
Yes, she's also... her programme is based on really two of the most influential women of 20th century Paris, musical Paris. One was a lady called Winnaretta Singer, who was an American, the heiress to the Singer family sort of fortune. And she married a French prince, Prince de Polignac. And she had a salon in Paris, and she encouraged all sorts of the major artists in the early part of the 20th century. So, as well as, you know, Picasso and Cocteau and people like that. Also Eric Satie, who's very famous from the sort of Gymnopédie and those sorts of pieces. But also Ravel, Debussy, and one of the pieces is Ravel's Pavane for a Dead Infanta, which is very famous. If you think you don't know it, come and hear it, because you will. You'll definitely know it. It's often used. There's also Mio as another French composer, and he wrote much jazzier music. So Amy will be playing Scaramouche, which is a fantastic piece, and was actually performed at the Proms a year or two back on the last night, by another very famous saxophonist, Jess Gillam.
Because the saxophone has suddenly gained prominence, and she now has her own little half-hour programme on Radio 3.
That's right. Well, she certainly is. She's very engaging. So, you know, so she has got a very interesting programme on radio. And the saxophone's been going, as we know. I mean, Adolphe Sax, who invented it, I think he was Belgian, in the 1840s or so. So, I mean, it's been around a while. It's just, it's typically been associated with jazz, and those and that kind of music, and and increasingly it's incorporated into the classical world.
And of course on this occasion in Emmanuel United Reformed Church, which won't be there for that much longer in fact, Amy Dixon's going to be accompanied by Martin Cousins on the piano.
That's right.
Let's hear a little bit of the Philip Glass, which is called...
This is from the Philip Glass's violin sonata, but it's arranged for saxophone by Amy.
Amy Dixon appearing at the Cambridge Music Festival on the 7th of November, among lots of big names. That was Philip Glass's violin sonata. And Cambridge is full, year-long, at least while the students are here, of concerts every night, usually two a night.
Yes.
And really, there is just too much to take in.
There's too much choice, yes. Mm. So I think, again, that's one of the things about a festival. I mean, it's quite hard to take over Cambridge because of there are so many things going on. So if you're running a festival in Cambridge, I think what you have to do is to make each event a little bit special. And that social aspect, whether it's talking to the artists, whether it's, you know, having a drink, or it's something just to change the atmosphere, is all part of it. And yes, I would put that down to the festival feel.
This is quite a catalogue, Justin, isn't it? But you've got Ifagellini appearing with Leonardo, Shaping the Invisible. Tell us all.
Well, this year is the 500th anniversary of Leonardo da Vinci, and what Robert Hollingworth and actually one of the Leonardo authorities, Martin Kemp, Professor Martin Kemp, the two of them have come up with a programme of choral music, because Ifagellini is this wonderful, what's called a cappella, it's unaccompanied, they just sing solo, and it's one voice to a part, so it's just 8 to 10 voices. And they have chosen music from the last 500 years, essentially. And what Martin Kemp has done has picked some of the key images that you know of Leonardo da Vinci. You know, you've heard of the Mona Lisa, perhaps the Last Supper, but also some of the other things, the sort of designs or the inventions, you know, like the prototypes for a flying machine or things like that. And each one, they've chosen music to go with it. And one is meant to sort of try and enhance your understanding of the other, and it's a really interesting program and a beautiful program, because a lot of the music is very attractive, and a lot of it is from Leonardo's time or a little after. So the sort of music we're talking about, sort of Thomas Tallis, Josquin, people like that. So if you like that kind of Renaissance, late Renaissance polyphony or choral music, then you'll absolutely love this.
You're an enthusiast, aren't you, Justin?
Well, I think everyone is, aren't they, about music? We all like different kinds of music. We all like a wide range of music. So, I'm definitely an enthusiast.
But you like to actually explore it all. And I imagine Justin Lee thinking, next year we'll have... Oh, that's interesting. I'll do that and I'll do this and so on. There's a lot of plotting going on, isn't there?
For me, that's the best bit of the job. I mean, obviously, the concerts are fantastic, but actually thinking about the possibilities, thinking about what you could do, is really exciting. And I'm already doing that for next year, for 2020, but also years beyond that. No, that's one of the joys of the job, definitely.
Justin Lee, director of the Cambridge Music Festival, a true enthusiast on just some of the highlights over the next couple of weeks.